Merry Christmas, Parish Orphans and Retrogrades out there. Today, as promised, I have intelligent, as much as the two of us can vouchsafe that, discussion and debate on Fiducia Supplicans. The difficulty with anything out of the late Francis Pontificate is getting intelligent discussion debate because the two sides want to just sort of take aim at each other and talk from behind a not a paywall, but a kind of veil of non-interlocution where you never have to deal with the arguments from the other side. Well, the good part is I very much respect and have had on this show someone who is on this issue on the other side, which is classical theist. What's up, CT? Merry Christmas. Happy fifth day of Christmas to you, bro.
Merry Christmas to you too. And thanks so much for having me on. And I totally agree with everything you said there. It's really important to have open and honest discussions about this, you know? And before we, I guess I'll let you finish introducing things. But I do want to kind of give a caveat to my position, just to make sure that that's clear too.
Yeah, awesome. Well, that's enough introduction. So I have not actually looked at anything specific on your position. So all I know is I want to do this in three segments today. And I'm assuming that you're at least by a distinction of degree, not necessarily a distinction of kind, more on the, I don't know, hermeneutic of continuity side of this thing. As you have been for the last year or 18 months with all things Francis or most things Francis. Is that
Yeah,
fair?
like with a big caveat here though, because I want to just make it very clear that I don't really have a dog in the fight in a certain sense, in the sense that I have no pro I have no a priori commitment to the impossibility of this containing any kind of heresy in it. Like I'm not approaching this from the standpoint of as if to suggest that if there was heresy in this thing, that it would undermine the indefectibility of the church. Like
No way.
that's not the hermeneutic that I'm using, which seems to be like Lofton's her hermeneutic. And so if I'm proven wrong on this, I'm fine with that. It this is and in some sense, I'd consider this to be one of the lesser controversial things that have come out of the Francis Pontificate, actually. I think Amoris, for example, is more difficult to square than this thing is. But I with respect to this document in particular, yes, I do sort of approach it from a hermeneutic of continuity. And I think that's the best way to approach these things unless all else fails. Like you have to be able to prove absolutely that the contradiction is present, that it's there. And from that point you move forward. But that's like worst case scenario. If all else fails, then you do that. But I am not at that position at this time. And I did like a whole 2.5 hour rundown of this entire document. I went through it line by line on my channel if anyone's interested in looking at that. But hopefully we can kind of hash that out here a bit with the limited time we have.
Yeah, sweet. But we agree on that. Certainly, after Honorius and lots of popes like Honorius, we can't believe that, hyperpapalism or anything like that, that a pope committing some sort of heresy or being ex post anathematized would destroy the magisterium or the church. No. And that simply and straightforwardly is the position simplicitaire of most of the people who are making arguments concomitant to the one you're making, but definitely not you. You know too much for that. So I want to discuss this thing in 3 points. Like I always do, propositional logic. Okay, I want to propositionalize everything. And the easiest way to do that is the first point is just Aristotle's got 10 categories of being. The first one is substance. The other nine categories are accidents. So I want to talk about what is the ousia, what is the substance we're discussing today, which is fiducia supplicans, to make an analogy. And then in the latter two segments, we'll talk about sort of accidental properties of it. the stipulative property of it in the second section, and in the third section, just historiography, which I think historiography makes the case better than arguments with regard to fiducius supplicans. So,
yeah.
But first off, what is under debate? Let me set a little timer here. No, we're friends, so there's no need to hold anyone to anything super strictly. But here's 4 minutes.
Right.
Then you have 4 minutes. I'll rebut for 4 minutes on this first topic, and you will rebut me, and then we'll go on to the other one. So each topic of three will take roughly 16 minutes. Okay, so what I'm calling the substance, the proposition being debated here, resume the clock, it's got four parts. The reversal by a legal allowance, in a legal document, of the dubia responsum in March of 2021, the doctrine, on joint blessings of SS couples. And let's just call them SS couples, if you don't mind, CT.
Yeah.
Not several blessings, right? Joint blessings. Not SS marriage. No one thinks the document's about
right.
that. Not SS civil unions. No one who's on either side of the document believes that that's what this document circumscribes. Not at all. When we say couple, relationship, or union, we're not talking about either civil unions, which is a kind of legal marriage, or a sacramental marriage between the SS dudes. We're not talking about that. We're talking about couple, relationship, union, not a civil union or a sacramental marriage, because that's off the table. This is always how things work. So in the first case, I just want to establish that I've seen a lot of people saying this changed nothing. There is no reversal of the March 2021 doctrine set out by Cardinal Ladaria, where he responded negative. There cannot be blessings, any blessings, the genus's blessings, any species of blessing for SS couples. And the specific word was, they said negative, you can't do this. It's a dubia responsum promulgated by the Holy Office. It is not licit to impart a blessing on relationships, partnerships, which is also a translated couple, relationships, partnerships, even stable ones that involve sexual activity outside of marriage. An important subclause here that a lot of people miss is even stable ones. So that means that we're talking about all outside of marriage, in this case, SS couplehoods, cannot be blessed in any kind of blessing, whether they're stable or unstable. Unstable means the kind of rapport, let's say, between these SS folks that's normally forged, which is it's frenetic. It's you come together as a couple for a night or half of a night or something like that. Is that even the stable ones? So that's most important. No blessings. Doesn't matter whether you call it a pastoral blessing or a liturgical blessing. There are no blessings. That's the doctrine. And yes, it's a doctrine about praxis. It's a teaching about what can be done. But same as the church can make a teaching about what can be done with regard to the sign of the cross. If you said, this is Trinitarian, you must do the sign of the cross. You can't do a sign of, sextuplets or something like that, because it's a Trinity. So this is a teaching about a praxis. It's a reversal of this 21 doctrine. I'll read it right now. On joint blessings, not several blessings. We can talk about that in a minute, but I want to let you respond first. Of SS couples. This is just as a matter of inarguable fact, what is under issue here. There's the timer. I'll just take 10 seconds and read what the reversal is. Here appears the possibility of blessings for couples of the same S, of the SS. I'll let you have it. Just those four parts, reversal of 21 doctrine on joint blessings of SS couples. What do you say? I'll set this.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think that's a very convincing way to lay it out there. I think though that when you look at this a little bit more carefully, anyway, I'm not getting into what are the clandestine sort of underlying intentions behind this whole thing. We can get into that later. I'm
Yeah,
just
me
talking
neither.
about like what does the text say? I think that in a way, like this declaration, fiducia supplicans, is sort of recognizing that what it is doing is it's providing additional contexts that weren't really addressed in the earlier in the earlier document, and then seeing and then asking the question, okay, do these additional contexts that we are now introducing into the situation, do these additional contexts require sort of an additional category of blessing that is able to, in a certain sense, escape the scope of application from that original 2021 document. And it seems to be explicitly doing just that. It is kind of interesting that it takes great pains, this document does, to specifically say that we're talking about blessing. And I'm with you. Like, it is talking about blessing the couple. Like, in other words, it is a joint blessing of the two people. Yes. But it is also specifically a not like it's we're I grant you, we're not talking about same-sex marriage, we're not talking about civil unions, but the document also says we're not even talking about a legitimization of their own status. We're not talking about validating their status in any way. That seems to me to be what the 2021 document was specifically condemning, any kind of blessing of the joint couple that is in any like, that in any way has as its object the sexual union, like as its object the union insofar as it is a homosexual union, insofar as it is marked in some way by the definition of homosexuality that you find in the Catechism of the Catholic Church. I think that's the operative definition that we really want to go with here. And I went over that definition in that stream I did a while back. So if we're talking about blessing a homosexual union, this document is still excluding that. It's still excluding blessing the sexual relationship. What we are talking about, it seems to me, is blessing the two people insofar as they are in relationship to one another. And what kind of blessing, what is the character of that blessing? Well, it's specifically this third category of blessing that's introduced in this text, and that is sort of also carrying with it some theological reflection on blessings that the Pope had given previously, which is not a legitimization of anything or a validation of anything, but specifically a sort of a petition for actual grace, a petition for God's grace to live better and to live in greater fidelity to the gospel. If that's the specific aim of the blessing, excluding a legitimization of the status, excluding a validation of the status, excluding even the object of the blessing being the sexual union, what are we left with? Well, we're left with these two people in a relationship that is marked by sin, that has been maybe it's even cleansed of the sexual sin at this point, or maybe it's not. But these are people approaching the church, requesting help from God, actual grace from God to live better in greater fidelity to the gospel. And if that is the circumstance, and if it is clear that that is the circumstance, such that any scandal or confusion about what's being done there is avoided, then of course that blessing can be given. What is the object of the blessing? It's to give grace in that relationship. It's so that the grace of God can move in every dimension of that relationship, such that in simultaneity, whatever is good in that relationship can be enhanced, and whatever is sinful or rooted in sin can be expunged, diminished, rooted out.
Okay.
So I think that's what it's getting at.
Yeah. Let me set this for moi. Okay. Well, again, not to be like, I don't know, bristly, but what's under issue is whether there's reversal of the 2021 year old doctrine against joint blessings of SS couples. We'll talk at the end about why this is important historiographically. In 2019, the German synodal way was formed to initiate, to fabricate precisely this form of blessing. And the story about the development of 4 years is really important, but I'll talk about that in time. Chucho Fernandez, our doctrinal chief, head of the Holy Office himself, says, the declaration implies a real development, that is a change, from what has been said about blessings in the magisterium.
Yes.
So he, and I'm not trying to, a lot of people on your side of things are saying there is no change. This couldn't be a clearer change. The document in 21, it's a dubium responsum, says, I don't just want to talk past you, I want to address a couple of the things you said, but it's really important that we're clear about this. The 21 document says you can't, for a bunch of reasons, mistakeability and scandal, but for the quiddity of what a blessing to a couple, a joint blessing is in itself, the 21 document says no joint blessings where it's a two by two, right? That's a joint blessing. Each of those guys, the 21 document is crystal clear. It didn't even need to be crystal clear because it can always be the case. You can go get an individual blessing on your way to do a murder. A mafia can do that. A bank robber on the way to the bank robbery. An adulterer on the way to his adultery. Because that is a blessing of the person invoking all that. But when you're blessing an enterprise, a joint blessing takes on a different meaning, no matter what in law we'd say the dicta is. And it is, as a matter of fact, a doctrinal change, and one in such a way that it is a negation of the negation. They literally are answer negative. I don't really care about the dicta in this legal document because of the nature of legal documents. When you go from saying it is not licit to impart any blessings on SS relationships, which is verbatim, it is not licit to impart any blessing on any SS relationships, to here appears the possibility of blessing couples of the SS of the same sex. This is a reversal type of change. It's not the kind of, no matter what dicta the changer uses to characterize his own change, it's still the kind of change that we cannot have in the Roman Catholic magisterium. And I'm not getting into gay marriage or even gay civil unions. We're just talking about the couple qua couple. Now, in the October the 2nd responsum to the dubium, which had been actually published in July, right at the opening of the synod, it's responsum to Cardinal Dominic Duca's 5E. I said there's going to be trouble. I did a show on it. 5E responsum. Francis, I would put it on the screen, but it's not necessary. It's not just a possibility for a several blessing for the two members of an SS couple. That's always been fine. 21 document reaffirmed. This is fine. But it is a joint blessing, and this will be a change. What I mean by joint versus several at law, you know, me and my wife hold some rights jointly, some rights severally. It means at the same time, as the 21 document makes clear, it doesn't matter if you subdivide the kinds of blessings as this document did, fiducia supplicans. It's subdivided, and now it said, well, now we made pastoral blessings, unlike liturgical blessings, you can't do it. No, the teaching has always been no joint blessings, only individual blessings. Final point, if I say to my son Gabriel, if he says, hey, dad, if he runs up here now and says, can I have cake for breakfast? And I say, yeah, but let me tell you all the reasons why cake is not good. If I'm issuing a legal proclamation the way magisterial documents do, all that matters is the holding, like a verdict at court. All the rest of the justification is just called dicta. people need to start thinking more like lawyers. Because what would happen if I said, yeah, you can have cake, but cake can actually be a toxin if it's over ingested, and it'll make you fat and slow and low-key and blah, blah. You know what he's going to say to that, my six-year-old? Nothing. Because the second he gets the yes, he's going to go do it, which is exactly what we saw happen. The second they get the yes, they're not bound by the dicta. They're bound by the yes or no, the affirmative or negative.
Well, a couple things to say about that. I mean, when we're talking about magisterial documents, it is appropriate to approach it to an extent from that legal perspective, but it also is important to recognize that we are talking about teaching documents too. So, like, we're talking about not just a ruling so much as what is being taught theologically, and that's the purpose of the magisterium, is to teach, not but to bind, but also to teach in a binding way. So we do have to kind of speak about what the theological substance of what is being taught elsewhere in the document that can help contextualize what the ruling is. Secondly, when you say it is a development, I agree with you. It is a development, but it's not really a development on a question about homosexuality. It is a development, actually, the document says, and it's sly in this way, it's a development on the subject of blessings, like the theological understanding of blessings just by themselves, like what is a blessing, right? What are the categories of blessing? And then it goes into it, it enumerates several categories of blessing. And I think what this document is trying to do is to introduce this category of blessing that completely sidesteps the sense of blessing that is being referred to in the 2021 document, which is not only the liturgical blessing, but blessing considered as a legitimization of the status of something, considered in the sense of approving something, sanctifying something as it is, right? And Fernanda seems to be saying that that's the category of blessing that is completely ruled out with respect to same-sex couples. And so I don't like that this development has happened. I don't like that this has even been put forward in this document, but I can't really object to it so much on theological grounds when it's laid out in that way. If we're referring to a blessing that is specifically excluding legitimizing or approving or validating even just the status of the relationship itself, I can't really say that that's theologically incorrect, because if all we're really doing, and I know this is not going to actually end up happening in a lot of jurisdictions, which is why this document is scandalous. Like, I would say, like, if this were presented under inspection by like a prior pope, it would be given like the censure of scandalous, right? In my opinion. And it is, and that's why I don't like it. But in terms of the theological substance of what it's getting at, if all we're talking about is blessing this couple who comes up is opening themselves up to wanting to live better and greater fidelity to the gospel, and we impart God's help on them in this form of a blessing, like benedice, bestowing grace upon them, specifically aimed at helping to mend their situation, specifically aimed at, and it says actually later in the document, enriching but also healing. And these two things cannot be separated from one another in the act of blessing, like enriching whatever is good about the relationship between them, but also healing what is sinful. And really what you end up with is some kind of a friendship. And I know I'm almost out of time, but I really would like to discuss maybe what actual concrete scenarios in which I can see this licitly applying to. Because I do think there are a couple, and there aren't many, but I think there are a couple that I can actually envision here and now, and especially into the future.
Yeah, you want to lay them out so I have something to, like, quickly, so I have
something. Yeah, just really quick. Like, first of all, we have to think about the fact that, look, we are in a rough situation in terms of this current generation and the next generation. I think it's upwards of 30% of Gen Zers or Gen Alphas consider themselves like LGBTQ or whatever. And of course, we know that homosexual relationships are by and large marked specifically by their transiency. They don't tend to produce like stable commitments or whatever, but some of them you are going to have a percentage of them that are going to be that way, and they're going to be there. So there's going to be increasing amounts of homosexual or whatever couples that have been in like a financially interdependent relationship for decades. Maybe they've adopted some child, or they've used surrogacy to have some children or whatever. And then, so they're going to be in this long-standing partnership, and maybe they begin to recognize the error of their ways. They begin to recognize that, okay, maybe they've watched some Timothy Gordon content, and they're like, wait, what are we doing here? What are we doing with our lives? And
Shit ain't cool, man. What
yeah, like
doing?
we got to start to move away from this. But they're in this rut, like they're in this very difficult, tricky situation to just get out of all at once together. And so they need the church's help. They're going to need the church's pastoral assistance to get out of these situations, or if they have to retain some kind of a relationship with each other, they need the church's help to root out what is sinful in that relationship until they can actually break apart physically in the future, right?
Yeah, but they
And
need the church's clarity, letting what
of
Jesus said,
course.
let yes
Yeah.
mean yes and no
And
mean
that's
no.
a problem with this document, is the lack of clarity about that. But in terms of like, but let's look at the situation. If they are in this like stable, if financially interdependent relationship, they can't immediately like leave each other physically, but they know that they're not supposed to be engaging in a sexual relationship, and they approach the priest, Father, can you bless us? Can you help us? Can you? We need God's grace in relationship to each other, so they are a joint couple. But and so the blessing would correspond to them insofar as they're in relationship to each other. But it's specifically aimed at like enhancing whatever aspect of the relationship might be good, so that it can move toward healing, right? Like if they were able to like form some friendship out of this, that's able to provide some basis for spiritual mutual help to exclude or to root out the sin in their life, until they can actually physically separate from each other, I think that would be a wonderful thing.
But here's the problem. Here's the problem. Since now we're just this is kind of the end of segment one. We'll just talk like dudes for 30 seconds.
That's good.
You said that the framework in the December 17 document, Fiducia, sidesteps the problematic dimensions that are laid out in the dubia responsum of March of 2021. It does not sidestep the problematic aspect. Here's what sidestepping the problematic aspects of blessings would be as laid out for 2021 years, which is what the magisterium has to do in present a univocal teaching voice. It could offer several blessings to both of the members of a same-sex couple. They could both go to the priest like a line for confession. And as that March 2021 document makes very, very clear, they could do this and they should do this, even though they're going to continue misbehaving in the sense of Austin Powers, right? They're going to keep doing their whole thing. But the 2021 document teaches the Catholic truth. And this was circulated by Cardinal Ladaria, and it was a surprise, by all accounts I've ever read, to Francis, who did sign it but then reversed it. It presents the Catholic truth. We cannot give blood. The Catholic Church partakes of formal cooperation, or at least proximate material cooperation, by conferring a blessing on an enterprise jointly. There's no kind of joint blessing under the sun that does not run foul of formal or at least proximate material cooperation by conferring a blessing on a joint enterprise like a couple. But as the 21 document said, the way to sidestep theological problems is to say several blessings. You can drive in your little Subaru to confession or whatever it is. That'd be if it's girls, right? A pair of girls. Take your Subaru with all your stickers on the back, drive over to the church. You can each get a blessing, and we can confer the grace to do this. But the Catholic teaching, and it is a teaching and it is irreformable, is that there are no blessings under the genus of blessing. Even if you fabricate new categories, ex nihilo, cannot be a joint blessing on the couple. That is, like you said about magisterium, that is teaching And by the way, CT, when you said, oh, well, it's not just a legal document, it's the magisterium. The magisterium is comprised of legal documents that have the force of proliferative law, which is teaching, which is instructive. But I will say the March 21 document, a lot of people don't know this, was a dubium responsum, which is strictly legal. The October the 2nd document, which told us they're going to reverse irreformable teaching, was a dubium responsum. Look at paragraph 5e when you get a chance. This, yes, was a declaratio, which is high magisterium. Sure, it's got instructive legal value, but its main value was to answer yay or nay, and it answered yay on something that the teaching of the church said it must answer nay on.
But if we're considering this other quote-unquote category of blessing in fiducia supplicans, and this is an unfortunate part of the document because it is very sly and it is introducing really more, just more ambiguity in the discussion concerning our understanding of what a blessing is. But the document is kind of saying that, okay, we're introducing this concept of a blessing that is more just broad-minded. It's really not subject to the theological definition of a blessing that is provided in that 2021 document, because in the 2021 document, blessing is, in a way, it's just completely, there is no understanding of blessing in that 2021 document that does not reduce to some kind of approval or legitimization or validation of the status of what is being blessed. And so this document remains faithful to that because it's specifically excluding any blessing that has that as its object, legitimization, validation, anything like that, because it's so it specifically saying that.
Look, we're taking two different approaches, which makes sense because, yeah. Sorry to interrupt you, because you're a theologian. I'm a metaphysician. We're both Thomists, right? So I'm thinking, and I want to talk about this in the second segment, which we should get to, the first principles of stipulation in the sense of, Thomistic precision, in the verb is to prescind. And this is really big in chapters 3 and 4 of the De Ante et Essentia in St. Thomas, which is obviously huge for the Thomistic metaphysician. I'm talking about what something really is. And what's crystal clear, you make it sound better than anyone I've heard defending it, but still not enough to get over the hill of making it crystal clear that the genus type, all joint blessings cannot be conferred no matter what the dicta says. And this is what we've seen Francis do for now 11 years minus 2 months, time and time and time again, use the most florid, prolix documents in the history of the magisterium. Amoris Laetitia is the longest document ever.
Yeah.
Chapter 8 was all that he promised to deliver, and Cardinal McCarrick, who gave us Francis' promise to deliver, was chapter 8 of Amoris Laetitia. It's in law, it's called papering someone under. These are the longest documents ever, all to say, if I tell my son you may not shoot a basketball today until midnight, and then later, if I had one of those wives out there, I don't, but if I had one of those wives out there that tries to mitigate or outstrip what I say later, then she says, well, Dad meant a usual orange basketball. I went out and I bought Gaby a little blue basketball to get around your rules. I'd be like, well, that's defiant, but, and it's still a contradiction. Luckily, even though I was probably imagining in my phantasms an orange basketball, because most basketballs are orange when I wrote this, luckily I wrote the whole genus, no joint blessings, and that's been clear for 2021 years. It doesn't matter, make the document 10 times longer. This is a 5,000 word document for paragraph 31, just as Amoris Laetitia was the longest magisterial document ever written by the hand of a pope, just to get us a couple footnotes in chapter 8. I know what you're doing. Lawyers do it to each other all the time. It's called papering someone under. You still can't get around it. The genus, no joint blessings, is still the teaching. And so so let's go on to Thomistic stipulation, because I think this is a really, really clear way of treating it. There's a first principle, like a logical axiom, of stipulation. Anytime you see a stipulation, whether it's a theological one, a philosophic one, or a legal one, a stipulation is metaphysically, by this first principle, what is prescinded or stipulated out, as Thomas is sometimes translated, is the essence of the stipulation. Now, Fiducia Supplicans admits that a liturgical blessing couldn't accomplish what they had to fabricate a pastoral blessing to do. That's the whole case. For people that can do the syllogism here, that's the whole case. If you had to fabricate a new blessing predicated on this precision or prescinding from blessing, then you're admitting the whole case. You give the ghost away. I'll just say my 4 minutes is nearly done. You see what I'm saying? Because when you prescind from old blessing, well, now we're creating the term liturgical blessing, pastoral blessing. And of course, the whole genus of joint blessings was outlawed by timeless Catholic teaching. What's the essence of the stipulation? Why does Fiducia Supplicans admit that a liturgical blessing couldn't do what a pastoral blessing can do? Tucho Fernandez says in the document that it's because of the possibility of scandal, which is never a very powerful argument for or against. I don't really care about scandal that much. I'm a metaphysician. I care about the principle. And there is a metaphysical principle that you cannot have any kind of joint blessing, no matter how much you stipulate. And so the 2021 document, Last Thought, makes it very, very clear that no joint blessing can be given to couples. Several blessings can, not just because of the confusability for marriage, which no one's worried about on either side, or civil union, which no one's worried about, which clothes they're wearing, you're going to tell them they can't come get this joint blessing now if they're wearing too fancy a garb. It's the stupidest shit I've ever heard. The nature of the first principle of the precision is, well, we had to fabricate this new category based on the fact that if we kept blessing what it's meant for 2023 years, it couldn't be done. And it's more than just about scandal. It's because of the very essence of what a blessing is. Even if we used dicta to say, yes, go eat cake, but son, don't really eat cake because it's poison.
Well, I think you're getting into some deeper weeds here that sort of make this that actually it does reduce the problem to a more of a problem of scandal. And the reason for that is because, well, let's just kind of get down to brass tacks here. Let me quote for you part of paragraph 31 of the document. And without using the word blessing, let me ask you if you would accept, like, is there theological room for doing this specific action? Okay. In such cases, this may be imparted that not only has an ascending value, but also involves the invocation that descends from God upon those who, recognizing themselves to be destitute and in need of his help, do not claim a legitimization of their own status, but who beg that all that is good, true, and humanly valid in their lives and in their relationships be enriched, healed, and elevated by the presence of the Holy Spirit. And so whatever that is, I know, so they call it a blessing, but what is the underlying substance of what's being done there? It's invoking God through some special kind of a prayer for the actual grace. He says this in a couple lines later about what's really being asked for is actual grace, so that human relationships may mature and grow in fidelity to the gospel, that they may be freed of their imperfections and frailties, and that they may express themselves in an ever-increasing dimension of the divine love. So is there a problem with that? Let's ignore the word blessing just for a second. Like, is there a problem with them coming together, yes, as a couple, but requesting for that, requesting the grace to accomplish that? And wouldn't that necessarily just lead to like rooting out what is sinful in their relationship. And that would, of course, the end result of that would have to be their separation. But in whatever situation that they're in, moving towards that with the help of this actual grace, like, is there a problem with the substance of that?
Yes, there is a problem with the second clause, irrespective of blessings. And it's a smart way to ask the question, but neither of us are nominalists, right? So the term, the noun, the nominative that's in there, both of us rejecting nominalism, blessing,
but he's giving
even if
a definition.
Cross-hand equivocal, right? There's still a unit. There's a binding definition. There's an essence. There's a quiddity that's at issue here.
But the quiddity isn't reducible to the name. The quiddity is reducible to what the substance is.
And but I know that's sort of, why that's what I'm saying.
Right. But what he's doing is he's giving the substantive, the quiddative definition in a way that is not at all the same as
he's not as, though. And here's why. No, the quiddative definition is the relationships can be enriched, healed, elevated by the presence of the Holy Spirit. Read a little bit further. First off, I never got that this is a definition or some sort of lexicon, but I'll assuming arguendo that you're right and that it is. The last sentence, so that human relationships substitute the word SS, the words SS relationships, because that's what they're talking about, may mature and grow in fidelity to the gospel, that they may be freed from their imperfections and frailties.
But that's not what he's talking about, though, because Fernandez said later on in an interview that the union is not being blessed. And so what is the union? The union is the homosexual union. But there's an underlying relationship there.
He said not civil unions. He said not civil unions.
No, no. He also
said it is the union that's being blessed.
No, he didn't say
union is not civil union. That's what people.
No, I'm not talking about the civil union. I'm talking about the sexual relationship.
The couple.
Well, insofar as it's considered as a sexual relationship, because two guys together, we both agree that there is actually, there's no ontological positivity to a same-sex relationship in the truest sense, right? That doesn't have positive existence.
There's no moral positivity. There is ontological. There's an essence to sin.
But underlying that is a relationship between them that can be healed, that is healable. Which would reduce to a friendship, right? Even in marriage, you have
Not as a couple. You're not called a couple. Look, this
friendships
is an
are
definition.
Can be considered like if a friendship between me, let's say between me and you, you can consider that a joint relationship, which is just marked by friendship, and that's. And so when we're talking about a same-sex relationship, the document is very clear that insofar as it's a same-sex relationship, that's not given any kind of validation or legitimization, anything like that.
Well, in the dicta, all you're referring to, though, CT, is the doublespeak. It's very clear. I mean, it's very clear that the couple whose first definition we're going to use, partnership or union, I don't mean same-sex union. These are all synonyms. This is what is being blessed. That's what a joint blessing is. This is the difference between a joint blessing and a several blessing. No one would have any qualm with
it.
Francis have done a repetition of the several blessing.
But we're not talking, I'm not even talking about several blessings. I'm talking about specifically whatever relationship that does exist between person A and person B. Cannot grace enter into a relationship between them that can be aimed at maybe enriching a friendship element, but also aimed at rooting out any trace of the sexuality of that relationship? And now I'm going to say this too, the most straightforward fruit of that would be just a separation, right? A separation between the two. But sometimes it takes time to get there. And so in the meantime, God's grace is necessary to mend what is sinful and to enrich what is not sinful, so that those two things can come together and help person A and person B together abide in greater fidelity to the gospel. Greater fidelity to the gospel is the purpose of the blessing.
But
so like the blessing has as
so
its
I'm just
aim,
taking the Catholic teaching at its word. The Catholic teaching from an answer dubia in 2020, in March of 2021, which said, no, there is no joint blessing that can be conferred. And it gave a whole litany of reasons, not just scandal. Scandal is one of them, but it's always the weakest reason, right? Because it's consequentialist in its justification. In its rectificatory power, it's consequentialist. There are a bunch of other reasons given. So I'm taking timeless Catholic teaching, irreformable Catholic teaching, at its word. I don't mean this in like a personal way. You're taking what I receive as straight up Jesuitical casuistry, which is papering under with fancy sounding arguments, at its word in the 2023 document, as if, you know, with the hermeneutic of continuity, which is good to do with higher ranking magisterial documents, if it's not in direct contradiction to the 21 document. And it is here. And that's all I'm saying. You're giving,
I guess, what
the
I'm
most
saying
plausible
is,
read possible.
I can envision a scenario. So let's drop the homosexual thing. Let's talk about divorce and remarried unions or couples. Okay. Let's say they're actually trying to fulfill familiaris consortio's brother-sister dynamic, okay? But there's obviously some traces of sexual attraction there. So they need the church's help to, as a joint couple, simultaneously enhance the brother-sister dynamic while also rooting out the sexual dynamic. They need that because there are extrinsic circumstances that require them to stay in some kind of relationship with one another. And for that time being, while they're in that relationship, they need the grace of the church. They need help to enhance brother-sister, root out husband-wife, right? Like they need that in simultaneity. And so they, and actually this document is not just about same-sex relationships, it's also about those situations.
It's about both.
So can't you consider a scenario in which they approach a priest as brother and sister, but struggling with like a sexual relationship with one another? They request God's help. They request actual grace, in order to do just that, so that they can be free of this near occasion of sin that is present in their lives. And or maybe they're not there yet, but they're on this process of conversion. Like they need the help of the church, the pastoral presence of the church, in order to advance in greater and greater fidelity to the gospel, to fully realize and recognize what is the will of God in their life. And it's specifically to do just that, to root out sin, to root out any traces
of sin.
But
here's the catch. The 21 document specifically deliberates both situations. It's in response. Let's give some context, like Michael Lofton would have us do, right? 2-year-old German Sonata Way, which rose up in specifically in spring of 2019 in order to do these pastoral blessings. Ladaria had been saying, no, 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 you can't do this. He ended up getting fired for it. And in 2021, in March, he speaks with the full voice of the Holy Office, the full voice of the Magisterium, and says, you cannot do these pastoral blessings, though no one had made up the bifurcated quiddity or whatever the hell we're supposed to receive this as. Species of a genus. You can't do the entire genus. You can't do it for a guy at work doing his secretary, who he and his secretary might want to go and get a blessing on their relationship. No, for several reasons. Two, Adam and Steve want to go get it for their relationship. No, it's that simple. I'm always the philosopher that's like, well, let's talk about what's really at play here. Let's talk about the real Uzziah. Well,
could you address those specific situations that I've kind of laid out? Like, does that not require... Could that not require, especially in the future as these things become more and more common, could that not require
a blessing?
Well, some kind of a invocation.
Absolutely.
Okay, and that's what it's, and that's the definitional concept.
It is, but look at what the 21 document points you to, a several blessing. The kind you can
but
get.
They might,
at
but
the
that's
end
not
of confession.
Really addressing, though, the specific requirement for God's grace to be present insofar as they're in relationship to one another. I mean, that grace has to apply to them in relationship to one another because the relationship has to be healed. The
No.
relationship.
So wait, you're thinking that, because I thought you said that there's some ontological privation at work whereby a gay couple or a guy and a secretary couple isn't really a couple. And I'm like, well, morally, yeah. I would say that what you're offering militates against the argument at all. What absolutely does confer the grace on your sin, qua sin, is if you go at the end of your confession and you just say, Father, would you give me a blessing? I'm trying to leave this evil, wicked couplehood, partnership. That's the term from the 21 document. That's not a real one in terms of a grace-filled one. I'm trying to leave it. That is the timeless teaching of the church, that this is how you leave a wicked partnership or a La Cosa Nostra if you're trying to get out of the mob. This is how you do it. You go and you say severally, can I get out? You could pray to leave a couple. Are you saying that's not a possibility? Because that's what the church has always taught.
Well, sure,
Why
but
would you do it together?
because in the meantime, while they have to retain, maybe they have to retain some kind of proximity with one another. Maybe they have to retain some kind of a friendship. Maybe that has to continue for a time before they can separate and remove that occasion of sin. And
Can't imagine why that would be, but they certainly, whatever it would be, cold turkey's the way you quit anything. A. So that
I'm not
sounds like
saying like they.
gradualism.
I'm not saying they return. I'm not saying that they retain some semblance of the sexual relationship. I'm saying that there may be circumstances that require them to retain some kind of, of
Rapport.
a contact
But
with each other.
fine, but not, that doesn't mean. They can even, like I said, they can take the same Subaru over to the church. And what Catholic teaching is, I don't know what this shit is from Fiducia Supplicans, but what Catholic teaching is you can even take your Subaru over to the very, very LGBTQ friendly church, and you could one drive, one ride, and you just get one by one several blessings where you're praying for this. Can you not? Why would that not
You
avail?
certainly can, but I guess the question is, what's the theological basis for excluding them asking for the same thing together? And the same thing is so that they can root out sin in their lives.
Formal cooperation with sin,
But what are they formally cooperating with?
if someone walks up to you and says and
Like, if they're
punches
asking for this in
you in the
particular.
cheek and says, I did not just punch you, that's a kind of performed contradiction, right? That's what
Sure.
Fiducia Supplicans is, and it's specifically what Ladaria lost his job for, and what he safeguarded against or thought he was safeguarding against was performed contradictions, doublespeak. He said, it doesn't matter what flower you should. I mean, I encourage everyone to go read the 21 document. Everyone asks, did you read Fiducia Supplicans? Did you read the Dubia Responsum from not you, but people out there from March of 21? It specifically safeguards against the kind of doublespeak he knew would be coming out of Francis, because it's what Francis did in Amoris Laetitia. It literally, he's like, what you can always get if you need help leaving a wicked relationship, is you could go get
Well,
a several blessing, even, yes, while you're still in the relationship. And that's
but
all you're
it seems to
presenting
me,
as a
okay, so
chronological difficulty. You
let's
can't get
again.
it jointly because of what the nature of a joint blessing is. It has aquity. The aquity is a joint blessing, no matter what other dicta you use, acknowledges we have La Cosa Nostra and there's something positive about it. By the way, this language at the end of paragraph 31, CT,
Okay.
mimics very closely the positive, the we must affirm positive aspects of SS
Right,
relationships
and I thought
from
that
the
too.
relatio of the midterm report of the 2014 Senate.
And
Very close.
I thought that too. And that's one of the scandals of the document is that people are going to separate the enriching from the healing, and that is going to happen, which is a terrible thing. Earlier in that paragraph when it talks about that the relationships be enriched, healed, and elevated by the presence of the Holy Spirit. People are just going to say, well, let's just enrich whatever quote unquote positive elements there are and just have them be on their merry way. I think that this document, unfortunately, the door is sort of left open for that, even though I don't think that the document really allows you to separate those things. But let's just make a concrete situation first. Okay, let's say you have Adam and Steve. They've been in this same-sex relationship for a while. They're financially interdependent on one another. They come to this realization that, you know, their sexual relationship is rooted in sin, and they approach the priest. The priest, you know, has a meeting with them in some meeting room, and they discuss things. They discuss the all of the circumstances that they're in. The priest gives them some theological explanation for why what they're doing is wrong, gives some pastoral advice, etc. Then at the end, the priest says, "All right, and I bless and let's impart God's blessing to both of you, so that you may take heed of this advice and to go on your merry way in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit. May God's grace shine upon you," and whatever. I don't see a problem with that. And that seems to be the only legitimate application for what this document is talking about. And
so was the church right? If you don't see a problem with it, was yes or no? Not trying to be legalistic here, but was the church wrong for 2023 years when it said specifically a blessing together is illicit, and that a blessing individually to leave the wicked relationship is wrong? Why do they need to be blessed together? And was the church wrong for all?
No,
this?
Because the church was not wrong, because the church is not, because when the church used the term blessing in that sense, it's speaking of legitimizing the status of something, approving the status, taking the relationship as it is, and calling for God's, you know, approval, or calling for God's further legitimization of the relationship as it is. And
the 21 document, CT, go read it, man. Don't you can't do it here, and I'm not trying to put you on the spot. You need to go read Ladaria's 21 document as closely as you read this, because it is very clear that any blessing of any joint blessing, that whole genus, with it runs, and what's it called, a proper accident, the highest form of accident of an acceptance, an affirmation. That's what the document's rife with. And that's why, so that is Catholic teaching saying all members, all species of the genus joint blessing, because it was 2 years after the Germans had introduced this, all of them carry with them the proper accident of affirmation. That's
okay,
the
but if, yeah, but, and then the 2023 document here is specifically adhering to that by saying,
violating it, but saying it's not.
Well, it's specifically saying that if we're talking about a blessing that is affirming anything, then we're not doing it. But what we're really referring to here is, again, the definitional content of what I gave you in paragraph 31, which is really distinct from the blessing that's being spoken about in 2021. I wish they didn't use the same word. I think using the same word is a terrible, like, scandal and problem. But when you're really looking at the underlying definitions of what's in paragraph 31 versus what is being spoken about in the 2021 document, they are very different. Because obviously, if a married couple, or, you know, even just a courting couple, who's you know, following the rules and everything, they're not necessarily, they're not in need, they're not specifically referring to the status of the relationship that is not in need of healing, or it's not destitute, in need of help, it's not
so the
frail. 20,
but the 21 document, CT, says joint blessing or whatever it is, Dubia 5e says blessings of one or more persons together. I said they're going to do joint, not several. That joint blessing is joint blessing. The Hungarians just yesterday called it a blessing in common versus a blessing individual. That's another legal term. It's all the same thing. These
what
are
if
very,
I took
very
the...
these are very old terms.
Sure, but what if they're in a room together and you just say, "May the Lord help you and give you both the grace necessary to avoid sinning against each other in your lives." Okay. And I know that's not like
That's not what we're talking about here. Yeah, that would be
well,
fine.
I what I'm saying is I know that's not what Tuccio necessarily envisions in himself as being the only application of this document, but
well, it's
I'm just
not
saying
what's laid out in the document, because that wouldn't be a blessing. That would be a kind of
it wouldn't be.
That would be a kind of like deprecation of your sin. Now, this
would
is...
it be an invocation, that for God to bestow actual grace upon you, even jointly together, so that you can live in greater fidelity to the gospel? Is that not what that is, though?
I know it's not, just by, because the magisterium's not, how many days since December 17th? The magisterium's not 11 days old, brother. The magisterium
sure,
is,
but
I mean, look, it's a great blessing that we have a 2000 year magisterium. It has stipulated all these things. We do not need doctrinal expressions as if this is the year one. And that's the
I agree with you on
only...
that.
But that's the condition for the possibility of the construction or interpretation you're giving. For me to be there with you, it would have to be year one, and this is the first word ever spake. It's not the first word ever spake. The magisterium spoke it 2 years ago, and they specifically said, we know what the German synodal way is doing. Ladaria had just censured Heiner Wilmer.
Well, I mean,
and
that would
we
be...
know what they're doing. They started trying to do it in 2019. And specifically, we are saying no joint blessing. I still haven't heard a reason why you can't, if you really mean let's deprecate the sin and give you graces to get out of this toxic, awful relationship. There's still no reason why the church, I've heard why the church was wrong for 2023 years in saying several blessings. That's the issue here. All these other issues are ancillary. The issue is, the church always taught it has to be several. It can't be joint. There's enough reasons why that we don't even need to get into them. But that was reversed or developed, and it doesn't avail us. The whole genus was... I'll give you the last word here, and then let's go to history. I just haven't heard it.
Yeah, I feel like, though, the kind of blessing that we're talking about, this like sort of informal pastoral blessing that's specifically aimed at invoking God's grace to root out sin, etc. That has been given prior, like magisterial commentary by Francis himself in 2020 in his catechesis on prayer, the blessing. And when you read that, like, there's really, it's very uncontroversial when you read his catechesis on prayer and the blessing. And so what Fernandez seems to be doing, and I don't like it, I don't like that this has happened, but I can't really rule out the validity of what he's doing, is he's leaning into what Francis's homily, his catechesis on prayer and blessing, and carving out an element of that that can just specifically and squarely apply to the circumstance that is articulated in paragraph 31, and essentially drawing a distinction on that basis between liturgical blessings or really any kind of blessing that is meant to affirm or legitimize or validate the status of a relationship or something, which is what falls under condemnation in the 2021 document. And on the one hand, and then this other kind of pastoral blessing that is more a direct application of Francis's prior teaching on blessings, generally speaking, from 2020. That specifically is restricted in scope to the kind of circumstances that's enunciated in paragraph 31. Now, it's a big mess, and I don't like it, and I wish that it wasn't spoken about in this way. And I understand, like, that it was foreknown that this would be horribly abused, but if the only legitimate and licit application of that would be the kind of scenarios that I had envisioned just a few moments ago, I just don't see necessarily like the theological problem.
The theological problem is that I have to make this correction, because I've been looking at the 21 document. It condemns all joint blessings forevermore. It anathematizes them, if you will, because their specific difference, their defining property, is affirmation. So what the 23 document attempts to do, and this is why I thought prescinding and Thomistic precision is so important for the second section, what it attempts to do is to affirm some types of joint blessing in contradiction to the condemnation of all types of joint blessing, and then use the dicta to prescind from the specific difference, which before the magister, we have two magisteria. We have a magisterium that says for 2023 years, people, all joint blessings of bad relationships, including bad hetero ones, are outlawed because their specific difference, their quiditative essence, is affirmation. The 23 document says, we made up this new category. We just thought of it the same way Francis has thought of all this new stuff that isn't Catholic. And this new category allows us to jointly bless while decrying the specific difference that for 2023 years, we said defined the very nature of a joint blessing.
That's exactly what happened. Like, what in terms of what the document is really just specifically saying, and it's only licit applications, which I know are not going to be followed, but if you just analyze that, what is the specific tragedy here? Is the tragedy the church developing the concept of a blessing, theologically speaking, or is the tragedy that the scenarios that I specifically outlined for you may take place? Like, and only those scenarios that I articulated.
Sorry, so what's the nature of the question again? Sorry, I zoned out at the end of the first option.
Yeah, so I guess like, is like the tragedy here, like the bad thing happening here, is it that the church has given a maybe in your view a ruptured understanding of what a blessing is, or is it that the scenarios that I specifically outlined for you might take place, and only those scenarios, because I understand that a whole bunch of slew of horrible scenarios are going to take place that aren't direct applications of paragraph 31.
It's both and. There's the principle and the consequence. The church has contradicted itself on yet another thing, the teaching on what the genus of joint blessings is, with all of its baked in essence, which contemplates more people being able to go to heaven, right? That's what this is all about. So that's a tragedy. Anytime the church actually contradicts itself, we're all triumphalistic talking to Orthodox and Protestants. Oh, the church doesn't contradict it. Well, it has, though. Now it has several times under Francis. And these contradictions have been stuck very deliberately into the Acta Apostolicae Sedis. That's the big one from, I guess, in principle. But what's more important to God is the consequence. Not to sound like a consequentialist here, that now is a matter of indisputable fact. Many, many, many more people are going to go to hell with the church's sort of false negative. No, you don't have cancer, when the doctor was looking at it. And the best example was, I think, day two, when Francis alum, Vatican alum, Father James Martin, went and he just started blessing people.
Right.
Look, yeah, is that an adequate answer? I'm not sidestepping the thing. I'd say it's both principle and consequence.
Well, I guess what I'm really getting at here is, like, is the problem that is the big problem you see that you would have scenarios that I outlined for you? Like, specifically, we're like two struggling homosexuals. They get in a room with the priest, and then the priest prays over them so that they might, so that they might receive, you know, grace in order to root out what is sinful, but also to relate to each other in a non-sinful way.
The big problem is that the church has now reversed itself on the nature of codified heteropraxy, which is, before, we're not allowing joint blessings because this precise thing will happen every time, even in a Leibnizian universe of best possible outcomes. Exactly what's happening today, tomorrow, over the next year will happen if you allow any kind of joint blessings, even with the false bifurcation. And the church has reversed itself.
But then we're entering into a dialogue here where I think there's a lot more agreement, which is, yes, I think that that is why I think that the existence, see, my big problem with this document is its existence, not so much what it specifically says. It's really with the existence of the document, because the existence of the document is a scandal, because it is going to lead to all sorts of scenarios that are outside the scope of what I had outlined previously, which seemed to me to be acceptable, right? Two guys get in a room, they're struggling, they're wanting to live a better life. They request the priest help, and the priest says, well, may Almighty God bless you to help you get out of this situation in the name of the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. I mean, I know we've just gone through all that discussion. I still don't see a problem with that in light of what the church has taught about blessings more broadly speaking. But
it's just been very specific that you can't do. I mean, we agree that the existence of the document is a problem.
Yeah.
But it seems like the worst sort of cope to say that when the church has said all joint blessings will lead to the harm that you're seeking to avoid and that you're now afraid of, then the church reverses itself on a certain kind of joint blessings, and you agree that it's going to lead to the selfsame contemplated harm. I don't understand what it seems like a distinction without a difference.
I guess, like, I came on here basically to give my take on the document itself, right? And when I read through it carefully, I don't see a necessary theological rupture in it necessarily. And that's basically the position that I've taken. I don't take that position because I have some kind of an attachment to this papacy, because I think that this papacy is necessarily precluded from making that kind of an error. Like, that's not where I'm coming from. But, you know, I just read the document carefully. I think about it, and I closely analyze paragraph 31. I don't really see a necessary problem if paragraph 31 is followed to the letter.
If you block in some Husserlian way, like the Husserlian epoche, if you block out the word blessing, which...
Well, not even, because, like, I just see blessing as the benedice, speaking of the... trying to bestow good on somebody, bestow the grace of God on somebody. And Jesus Christ himself is a blessing for the world, and Jesus Christ is the grace of God that's offered to all of us in whatever situations we find ourselves in. And, you know, if we take this broad-minded theological concept of what blessing is, I mean, I don't like that it's become so elastic, but I can't necessarily tell the authorities that they can't do that.
that's the difference, is there's no elasticity in Quiddities. When you say joint blessing, this is bad for a reason. All of them are bad for a reason. That's the church's 2000.
Well, if the definition of blessing is specifically of this kind of blessing is given in paragraph 31, that excludes the kind of blessing that's talked about in paragraph in 2021.
The definition is still the definition. I would say that's precision or dicta. That's prescinding.
Well,
but I think I nailed it on the head. Whether I'm not saying you have to agree with me, but I think there's a little clip where I was like, okay, 21 document condemns all joint blessings because of their specific difference. The 23 document now says certain types of joint blessings can be embraced, and we'll just tell you to watch out for.
Well, by the way, when you said that the church has had 21 years of speaking about what blessings are, that's not really true. The church hasn't really spoken, like, self-referentially about blessings very much.
About formal cooperation, I meant.
Formal cooperation.
Cooperation.
But not about blessings. Like, not about the ontological status of what blessings are.
And okay. I didn't mean that like for all 21 years that they've been talking about it.
That's important, because when
the church has spoken with one voice, and now it's a second voice after 20.
But when the magisterium intervenes on something sort of new, which is specifically self-referential theological reflection on what a blessing is, we have to be a little bit more open to continuity here, because it's similar to the usury issue. Like when the usury issue was given more theological explanation from the magisterium and vix prevenit, that was perceived by a lot of people to contradict what had been taught in the earlier Lateran councils about extrinsic titles and things like that. And there was actually a lot of theologians who thought, hey, this is a contradiction, like this is a magisterial reversal. How are we going to contend with this seemingly elastic scope of extrinsic titles justifying usury, like flat out usury, which had been condemned prior to that. And so what we had to do is we had to do our best to understand that the magisterium can offer further classifications of, for example, what an extrinsic title is, of what usury is, and that will require us after the fact to do our evaluation. Now, if there is a formal contradiction and if that is provable, then we can say, okay, we have to go with what is taught at a higher level and what is overruled, cannot be considered authentic magisterium, etc. But we have to be a little bit careful and a little bit more open, I think, to a hermeneutic of continuity when the subject under discussion is sort of new in the magisterium's reflection on it. And the concept of what a blessing is theologically, that is new. Like, I don't think, unless you can point to multiple documents in the church's past which give this exhaustive theological definition of what a blessing is, I don't think it's necessarily true that just because the 2021 document speaks about, you know, joint blessings, that exhausts all possible theological conceptions of what a blessing entails. And actually, the 2021 document has to be read in light of Francis's 2020 catechesis on blessings. So
I don't know about that, but it does exhaust all joint blessings cannot be done. So it's a contradiction.
Well, blessing considered in what sense?
And I don't think blessing is new. It might be. Look,
it's not new, but the
17th century is the.
But the church's reflection on what a blessing is theologically is new.
Well, of course, but that's like saying,
just like usury.
I think your analogy is in apposite between usury, because even though I do think that is close to a contradiction, by the way, there are new quiddities at play, though. Novelty requires prescinding. And fiat currency was new in the basically 18th century. Fiat currency is a fundamentally different thing.
Well, you know what else is new?
Pre-fiat currency. Not natural law.
No, definition. Not natural law, but people who are going to be, especially in the future, who are going to be entangled in these webs of immoral and irregular sexual relationships, who don't see like an immediate way of just getting out of them, but require the grace of God to help them maneuver through these tangled webs that they've gotten themselves in. Like we are approaching a situation where large swaths of the population are going to be just entrapped, entangled in these evil sexual relationships, polyamorous relationships, you know, homosexual relationships, trans relationships.
The Greek Romans. Half of all the Greek aristocrats had like a boy lover, man.
What is new, though, is it's not new in the sense of like absolutely new in the history of the world, but it is new in a certain sense because what you're talking about had been fizzled out through, you know, the Christian evangelization of the world of Europe. Like that had fizzled out, like the institutional support for those things. Now we have what is new is the reinstitutional support of these immoral sexual unions, which is going to lead to just larger and larger swaths of the population being entangled and trapped in those situations. And so I see no real objection so long as what's the aim of what's being done is clear, I see no real objection to a priest meeting with people who are entangled in these situations, offering God's help, offering like invoking the Holy Spirit to be present in their lives, so that what is wrong in those relationships can be healed, and what is good can be enriched so as to remove what is evil.
And that can't be done severally the way the church has always taught.
It can, but I see no reason why, like, it can't just be a general invocation. It's like, may God help all of you.
Well, God okay, help. Then we should get off our high horses then. And I've been off of it for a while. People know on Twitter. And you had a good tweet about this. About, oh, Orthodox Protestants, you guys don't even have a real magisterium. Ours never contradicts itself. At the very least, this is a contradiction of the 21 document. A genus is a genus. Or my name is Mickey Mouse. So you can reason about, you know, what genuses or genera are, or the soundness of the reasoning, but the era of triumphalism is dead, and the era of announcing the magisterium doesn't contradict itself is dead. Let me read for you this. Let me read for you this timeline. Here's what I think very compellingly, because historiography matters. I won't say more than this. I'll just say the timeline. You react to it. Homosexuality is not new. It's right, it's as old as man. So what is novel is, I'd say, the change agency of this pope and the group of folks that gave us this pope. In 2010, it becomes public for the first time that Bishop Bergoglio has supported very strongly SS civil unions, not just unions, but civil unions. So that's the first time it was ever published, and there's a lot of evidence that he had been a big advocate of it privately before then. 2010 is the first year, right before he became pope, 3 years before. In 2019, in December of 2019, so almost 2020, that's where all this stuff comes from. The German Synodal Way is born. It's initiated with a few goals. Women deacons, we're going to see a new class of women deacons that are not ordained, but more than Joanna and Susanna in the next 10 months or so. They're going to do exactly what they just did.
If he lives that long.
If he lives that long, it's going to happen. The German Synodal Way was initiated in order to bless SS unions and some other things. You're right, he might not live that long. 4 months later, 3.5 months later, after the German Synodal Way is born to do these things. The documentary Francesco comes out, takes the world by storm. Do you guys remember this? Where Francis says, holy cow, he says, we must, on a global scale, legalize SS civil unions. They must have rights.
And by the way, like, if I could just say, like, that was bad.
Because, no, I know you. I'm not saying you're like an advocate, or I know you hate that.
Yeah.
CT hates this. I hate this. I wonder what Lofton would say, but I'm like, you're not down with any of this stuff. I don't think you're down with any of this stuff on this timeline, CT.
Right. No. Yeah.
That would be an insult if I said you were. That's why I'm like, I don't know which of these line items you know and which you don't. In March of 2021, exactly a year after Francesco comes out, that's when we're talking about the 21 document that classical theists and I keep referring to. That's the month and year. It's a responsum to another dubia. It issues the specifically negative reply to whether church can bless jointly bless SS couples. Then in May of 2021, this is the really interesting part. The German Synodal Way, which is about 1.5 years old, in 80 German cities, it has a mass blessing. This is really important. Has a mass blessing in this spontaneous pastoral blessing that they weren't allowed to do until Francis undid it.
You say at mass?
On mass.
Oh,
like,
gotcha.
Like not
okay, at, I get what you're saying. Sorry.
I'm not sure what it was. It was probably on a Saturday. No, on mass, like 80 gotcha. Sittings across all of Germany, the German Synodal Way in May of 2021 does this mass blessing for lovers. That's, I think, the best term here is for lovers. Okay. Then in September of 2022, Wilmer, Heiner Wilmer, who is very close with Francis, who leads the German Synodal Way, is, according to meeting minutes, a supportive of every single German Synodal Way line item, including what had happened in those 80 cities and the condoning of outright, like, relations between two men, like relations.
Which, to be clear, was not condoned.
Which was not in any of these documents saying that you could just go do that. Yeah, totally. In November, Ladaria, our recently fired Holy Office chief, criticizes Wilmer as head of the German Synodal Way, calling for both what he said in the meeting minutes 2 months before and for the May blessing of across all of Germany. He criticizes him sharply, and he calls for a moratorium on the Synodal Way. And immediately after, in November of 2022, this is only about a year ago now, Wilmer and the German Synodal Way disobey. They say, we're not going to vanish. Literally, you could go read, do your own research, people. 2022, end of the year, the CDF, the doctrinal chief, says, you guys have to disappear. You're bad. You have to disband. Now, the very next month, after the doctrinal chief had said, you guys who are trying to do this blessing stuff for gay unions, you have to disband, Francis announces, Ladaria's out, you're fired. And he says, I think I'm going to have the German Synodal Way president as my main guy. He's going to take your job. So not only did in November of 2022, Ladaria said, you guys have to disband, they flipped him the bird, the German Synodal Way, led by Heiner Wilmer. But the very next month, it was December 27th or 28th, it's widely reported, reliably reported, that Francis really wants to make Heiner Wilmer give him Ladaria's job. He just disobeyed the man, saying the German Synodal Way doesn't have to do what Rome says. We're going to come up with this permanent synodal council, and we're going to do blessings, we're going to do female deacons, all this stuff. So Wilmer is preliminarily chosen the very next month after he flips the bird to Ladaria. That matters a lot. It goes away over Christmas. Benedict dies. It pops back up in January. And Francis, it's flown as Francis now is reconsidering it. This is his number one choice. This is reported everywhere. Best Catholic reporters, that he's going to Wilmer. And all of a sudden it goes quiet, and we get rumor that cardinals intervened. A lot of people think it's the leftist cardinals that are like, this will be too obvious. But that's reasonable speculation. July through August of 2023, this is very recent now, Fernandez is chosen, I think July 1st, instead of Bishop Heiner Wilmer, even though he's basically a clone, he's just not as well known, not as associated with the SS Union stuff. In his first week, Tucho says blessings for gay couples are possible, and that the guy he hates that had been punishing him, his old boss, Ladaria, was wrong. On July 10th, the five dubia cardinals submit their dubia. On the very next day, July 11th, Francis responds privately, but this would not be published until 2 days before the October Synod. On October the 2nd, that's when it's published. Duca, this is Cardinal Dominic Duca, his dubia, 5e responsum. He asks, can you do these joint blessings that the German Synodal Way wants? And Fernandez, the brand new CDF, christened in time, incarnated in time for the German Synodal Way, insinuates, yes, it can be for one, several, or more joint blessings. In other words, we're going to undo the teaching. And then, of course, December, whatever it was, 17th, Fiducia Supplicans makes good on that promise to undo the teaching from 21. But so there's a whole history there. You respond to that. I didn't make that stuff up.
No, yeah. I mean, I do agree with the general trajectory of what you're implying there, that it is a concession to the Germans. I do agree with that. But I also don't necessarily, because I don't see it as a reversal the same way that you do, I think it is also sort of a way of trying to rein the Germans in a little bit. so that they don't continue full steam ahead. Of course, they're going to do that anyway, but I see it. I do agree with you about the general trajectory of what you're saying. I think it is a softening and an attempted softening of the church's firm stance on homosexuality generally. I think it actually pertains more to a projection to the wider world, unfortunately, to the secular order, that the church is softer on these issues, that the church is trying to change her entire pastoral stance on homosexuality. I think that those do seem to be like that is that does seem to be the trajectory here of what they're really trying to accomplish. I think the 2021 document, I think they're what the 2021 document did. What caused for the Vatican is more than just internal church matters. I mean, I think, for example, I don't know if you remember this, and I've spoken about this as well. When the 2021 document came out, the Vatican was in negotiations with the Italian Parliament about some education, some resistance on part of the Vatican to cooperate with some of the educational policies pertaining precisely to these kinds of issues like gender ideology and so on. And so when the 2021 document came out, if I remember the timeline correctly, it did kind of throw a torpedo into those negotiations. That was another reason why Francis was upset over it. And it kind of did sully a little bit the relationship between the Italian Parliament and the Vatican. That was also a little bit of an issue there. So I think, but unfortunately, I think that this papacy is very much interested in projecting to the wider world, like more of a softer like tone, and that's all for political reasons. That's all for political ambitions, which I think are profane and not becoming of the successor of Saint Peter to be so much interested in clearing up the church's image so that she can be more widely accepted by the secular order. I think that's what this is really ultimately about is signaling to the world a softening of the church's stances on these sexual issues, which I think is the heart of the scandal. And I think that's the heart of the problem. And I think that's sort of that seems to me to be why we can't be triumphalistic anymore. Like that is why is because regardless of how we analyze these magisterial texts, you and I have different ways of doing that, and that's okay, I think. We arrive sort of at the same general conclusion about why this is terrible, and then why the church's or why like this pontificate's approach to these issues, pastoral approach to these issues, is just going to lead to a continual loss of moral credibility for the church in terms of her authority being perceived by the wider world. Like the world is not going to see the church as a credible moral authority if she keeps softening her pastoral stances ad infinitum, seemingly, right? And that's the crisis to me. To me, it's really a crisis of credibility. Moral credibility for the church to be this, because we used to pride ourselves like back in like the I mean I wasn't really around so much for this, but I know James White, for example, loves talking about the 90s and all the debates he had in the 90s, right? And our Catholic apologists would be like, the church has been solid. Contraception, homosexuality, divorce, remarriage, etc., 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 has and we pride ourselves on the church's firmness on those issues. And the church's firmness on those issues was specifically what invited a lot of other Protestants to come into the fold, a lot of Anglicans, right?
Exactly.
And we
Exactly.
don't have that, we can't brag about that anymore. We just can't. And while we disagree about like the interpretation of this document in particular, we are on the same page on the trajectory of this document and the consequences of this document. And the crisis of legitimacy that we're kind of in, and I don't know what the answer to that is, but I just wanted to kind of concede as much there.
Yeah, no, thanks. And obviously you're a smart guy, and that's why it's fun to talk to you. A lot of this just doesn't work in across all settings to even have a moderate size, not huge but not small, disagreement with too many people that don't have the training. It's just ugly. It's just ugly, and it's
Yeah.
never have that with you. What do you make of, though? I mean, that's one of the crises I decry, and it's not the tertiary or quaternary one, but it's, I don't think it's the primary one. I think it's a close secondary. I agree with you. What does one make? I'm not just asking you your opinion now. I'm saying what is your opinion of the opinion one ought to have of the entire continent of Africa, of Cardinal Burke, Bishop Strickland, these guys that, like, holding all other historical contingencies equal, we would say, okay, these are the holiest guys in the church, you know, Cardinal Sarah, Cardinal Burke, you know. Why are they coupled, if we bifurcate, why are they enemies of this Pope? If you're committed to a hermeneutic that puts the Pope in the best possible light, and all those friends are the German synodal way Belgian guys. And I know you're not, I would never say you're Lofton-esque. Like, I know you probably love the African cardinals, and I know you probably love Burke. So yeah. What are we to make of the dichotomization?
Well,
now,
a minor clarification with respect to that hermeneutic. It's specifically having to do with authoritative documents and teachings of the Pope. It's not about the Pope's personal character or vendettas or where he wants to take the church pastorally. I think we could just kind of wake up and smell the flowers, not have to do all that much investigative research to kind of discern what's at the heart of that. I think that the fact that he has made enemies out of those cardinals, those churchmen, but also of monuments to tradition, generally speaking, right? I mean, what was Traditionis Custodis really about? Like, what is just this vendetta that he seems to have against, like, the most convinced, the most committed, the most zealous? Like, what is that all about? And I have no qualms or really hesitancy in saying that I think that he has some kind of antipathy toward, I guess, real authentic zeal, like real Catholic zeal. I don't think he likes it. I don't think he likes that. And he doesn't want that to be the main face of the church. I'm not going to say that all of his reasons for that are nefarious. I mean, I think that maybe he sees it as just a, like, he sees all of these things as just maybe evangelically just untenable. Maybe that's part of it. But I also think, you know, he's a liberal pope. Like, he's a liberal person. He has progressive tendencies. And so, of course, he's not going to like all of these monuments to tradition, monuments to conservative reactionary Catholicism. Like, he's going to want to move the church away from those things because of his progressive tendencies. I have no problem admitting that we have a progressive pope, a liberal pope. We do. Now, because the church is so steeped in tradition and is so just uncompromisingly, in a way, conservative. Like, the church is conservative. Cardinal Pell made this point. Because of that, because of the church's long-standing conservative pedigree, even the most liberal of our churchmen are kind of be, generally speaking, even more conservative than the most right-wing secular politician. But that doesn't mean that that's no necessary, like, sign for consolation. It's just to say that I'm agreeing with you. I'm recognizing that we do have a progressive, we do have a liberal pope. The Holy Spirit, I think, will ensure that it doesn't go too far in that direction, doesn't go too much further in that direction. I think we will be spared from. And I think that if I could just say one last word on some grounds, some reasons for hope, some justifications for hope. I mean, I think that when you look at statistical evaluations of where the future of the clergy is, specifically in this country, very positive developments, very positive signs. I think that what Francis has done with Fiducia Supplicans is specifically in being rejected in its implementation, at the very least, by so many bishops around the world. That's going to affect the next conclave, and the next conclave is soon. We all know the next conclave is soon. He's on his last breaths. He's running out of steam, clearly. And I think the next pope is going to be maybe not a firebrand. He's not going to be, say, a conservative so much, likely, but he is going to be, I think he's going to retreat a little bit from the direction that this pope is taking things. I think that's very likely. I have some candidates that I hope are considered, like Erdo. I love Erdo of Hungary and et cetera. But I think there's a lot of reason. I think we really just have to have a disposition to weather the storm. I think we are on the cusp of things starting to get better, even in Rome. And eventually, things are certainly going to get better because the priests that we have are going to be the ones who are going to become bishops and then cardinals and so on. So I think we really just have to weather the storm. I don't think that we're facing like a never ending and indefinite intensification of France's progressive tendencies. I think we really are weathering the worst of the storm. And I think it's a testament to the Holy Spirit's protection of the church that this is likely the worst of it.
Well, I always liked Rush Limbaugh through all the years he did his thing. Was he's very knowledgeable, and he was always full of white pills. He's like a white pill dispenser. He knew more than almost anyone. And that doesn't mean I agreed with him about everything. I think he was wrong about some of his white pills, but they weren't idiotic white pills the way popesplainers are. Like, you're not actually at all a popesplainer, is the more I consider this. This is like Leibnizian, best possible universe. I don't think those are idiotic. I think some of them will likely turn out to be wrong, but this is a non-ridiculous version of best case scenario in the next two. Maybe 1, 2, 3 years. I appreciate what you just said. I think it's best case scenario, but not impossible. So thanks for saying it. And I don't disagree, since it's a historical contingency. I don't disagree on the grounds that it's impossible. That's the most I can say. I also entertain, probably more than you, that there are great apostasy implications on the worse end of the spectrum of possibility. But I've been very guarded, epistemically humble, about saying what absolutely I think the meaning of the Francis Pontificate is, or more in legal language, what the Francis Pontificate requires of the Magisterium.
I
What you
think
and I, yeah, go ahead.
if the Pope had been a bit more gracious, a bit more humble, a bit more of a gentleman in implementing these policies, I think we would be facing sort of a more of a worst case scenario. But I think it's really his character flaws that have put off many in the hierarchy, even those who would be more aligned with him ideologically speaking. I think that just his character flaws have sort of precluded the like indefinite continuation of his agenda. I think if anything, it's really just his own he got in his own way, I think.
Yeah, that's really insightful. Even the reports coming out of Rome from 2020, 2019, I think it was, Vatican wiretaps. The Vatican is now wiretapped in several places. Even they were saying the exact same thing. Even lefty cardinals are like, we're sick of it. The Vatican is marked by a climate of fear, was the
Yeah, but
lifestyle.
look at how he's treating Cardinal Berg. I mean, just kind of just stripping this man of all of his dignities, and it's just for no other reason than just, I mean, I understand that he might have his underlying theological reasons, like, okay, Berg has been he's not aligned with what I see as like the proper continuation of where the church needs to move theologically, sure, but I mean, the way he's treating him is just easily perceived as just wrong and sort of petty and vindictive, and that's not attractive.
No, it's not attractive, even if that's your guy doing it. He's
Yeah.
definitely not my guy, but yeah, I wouldn't want
Because
to
what does
see.
that signal to you? Like, even if you're an ally, like, what does that signal to you? Like, if you could be next on the chopping block,
Right.
like, if you're not as sycophantic as you should be.
Right. That's well said, man. So you do like what the African cardinals are doing?
Yeah, generally speaking, I think it's the right approach. It's the right approach to kind of, I think the best approach is one that comes from some of the dioceses in the United States, which is to kind of give a gentle nod to some of the what the document says, but to say that because it's so confusing, we're just not going to implement anything. I think that's the most healthy approach, and also to sort of, I think it's actually a really good opportunity, and some of these bishops have been doing this in the United States to reformulate, to rearticulate, to make homosexuality a theological issue again. It's kind of had that effect among some of the Orthodox bishops, which was to have give them an opportunity to present again the catechesis on homosexuality, which had been pastorally sidelined for a while under this pontificate. Like, bishops have not been talking about homosexuality very often under Francis's pontificate. Now they are. And I'm talking about the good ones, like the Orthodox ones. And I think this document has actually given them an opportunity to, like, in the interest of sort of trying to, for lack of a better word, pope-splain the document, they're actually trying to emphasize specifically the teaching of the church on homosexuality itself, which I think is a good development.
God writes straight with crooked lines. That this is a God's permissive will, not wise will. He can kind of correct it. I think I think that's what you're saying. If Francis had his way, and the St. Gallen guys in Germany and Hungary, not Hungary, Belgium.
Well, see, this is another reason why I have hope is because, look, it's a crisis of legitimacy when multiple bishop conferences are, some of them just flat out rejecting the document, some of them trying to, like, carve some kind of a middle path, and actually now sort of it's a minority who's just full-throated embracing the document. Really, you have, I think it's a plurality who are either just rejecting it or are projecting hesitancy. And that's a crisis of legitimacy. Like, that's a crisis of credibility. Like,
Right.
it's not, that doesn't bode well for a Francis the Second.
Yeah. Well, just so we're clear, and because we're agreeing too much for half a second, I'll say, yeah, I think the best response has been Africa. Like, look, this is a contradiction. We can't. That I probably didn't need to say that. That stems from, that's logically required as a conclusion of what I was arguing. What you
Sure.
said about some of the American responses is logically required by what you're saying.
I like Hungary's response too.
Yeah, it was good. Yeah, Erdo's good, like you said. Erdo's a
I
baller.
was surprised to see it from Erdo. He's been keeping a lot of things close to the chest.
He popped out some in 17 and 18 and was good on Amoris, which is the ultimate crisis of this pontificate is Amoris Laetitia. The only thing that really is, I'm confident, probably a formal heresy is Amoris Laetitia. This is not as big a
I
principle.
appreciate you saying that, because, like, that's the position that I've staked out, that, like, I find Amoris to be the most puzzling, the most
Absolutely,
difficult.
absolutely.
This one I find a bit easier.
It's
Amoris, very
yeah.
difficult.
Yeah, this is more true codified heteropraxy, more than some of the Vatican II documents, which both of us affirm. I know we agree on that. This is a little bit more formalized heteropraxy than that, but it's between, yeah, Amoris is after September 2016. When Francis took his letter to the Buenos Aires bishops and said, "You have the only correct interpretation," and then the very same day stuck his letter into the Acta Apostolica Sedis, that's serious problems. And even Cardinal Mueller, no far right winger, said this is probably formal heresy. And that's not just
Yeah,
heteropraxy.
and we had that show where I gave, like, my commentary on it. But again, all that on my end is more like trying to chart out possible avenues. I don't have, to this day, I don't really have a position on it. So, in the
Yeah.
same way that I have a position on this.
Well, we need to keep doing shows, because somewhere between Vatican I, Pastor Eternus, which is pretty much the Pope is infallible only when he's speaking ex cathedra, and Vatican II, Lumen Gentium 25, whereby all of a sudden we're supposed to basically treat the Pope like everything he says is ex cathedra, even if it's not.
And I will say,
That's
like,
a problem. That's a
that
problem.
is, like, Lumen Gentium 25, like, a lot of people like to say that's a post-conciliar thing. It's not. Like, if you look at the pre-conciliar manuals, like going back a long time, it talks about, religious submission of mind and will. So like it's a more deeply entrenched issue that I think we have to face and we have to think about. We have to develop. Like, we have to be contributors to the theological development of that category of papal teaching. Like, that's sort of the job that has to be the job of the theologian. That's why I love the work of John Joy and what he's been doing. And it's going to become like the issue, I think.
I think it should. I mean, I think Vatican III needs to be legitimate development of Pastor Eternus is pretty limited. You could be still quite, contrary to what the Orthodox say, you could be quite the papal minimalist reading Pastor Eternus. Then you read.
Pastor Eternus is more minimalist than Agathos' letters, okay? Like
Right.
in the first millennium.
It's not much. So I don't know what like Bulgakov and those guys who were there at Vatican I were saying. The guys that wanted to expand the purview of the pontificate say, oh, well, Vatican I would have said more stuff aggrandizing the Pope's power, but the Franco-Prussian War ended it. I'd say, no, I don't think so.
I don't think so,
I'd have
yeah.
liked a little more gloss,
In
but I
fact, they
like
were
that.
very, like, there were so many of the discussions were all about, okay, how do we square this with, like, these case studies that we have? So they were very careful, and they were very keenly aware of, like, the awkwardness of from Honorius and the awkwardness that comes from Vigilius and all of that. Like, they were keen. Now, you had some super hyper-ultramontanists who like, got a little bit more too excessive and zealous in support of the papacy for good reasons, by the way. Like, most of the ultramontanists were motivated by the fact that the Pope was this bulwark against this secularizing culture, but they wouldn't have even dreamed of articulating their positions in the way that they did had they been aware of what would come eventually.
And that's why I'm questionable on Lumen Gentium 25, but I think we're strongly in agreement that it's like this can be development where it's like it got cranked up a little, overstated, and the Francis Pontificate, if I'm taking the classical theist white pill, that could be the thing that the change agent that makes people go, okay, we need to go back to Pastor
And
Eternus.
Benedict XVI was close. Like, I don't, you recall that Christmas address he gave where he
Which,
did speak about limitations on papal power?
oh yeah, right toward the beginning of his pontificate,
Yeah,
I
and
think.
Benedict got close. I wish he would have written more. I wish he would have done more, but he has that famous quote about how, like, the Pope is not an absolute monarch whose words and thoughts are laws. And then he speaks about how, like, the Pope is bound to authoritative interpretations of Church's teaching. That was a landmark thing. I don't think people really appreciate the significance of him saying that. That's the first time, I think, where you have, like, a Pope speaking about the limitations of his own office. Like, before him, you just have constant, like, inflation, 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 inflation. And then Benedict's the one guy who kind of said, no, actually, here are some limitations here that we have to think of.
I'm glad you reminded me. You've reminded me of a few things, even through the disagreement. I'm glad you reminded me of that, because I do want to. I was a big Benedict fan after the Regensburg Address. It's just great philosophy, the three modes of de-Hellenization. That really reanimated me after getting a master's in philosophy to want to go and do doctoral study was that. And I went to Rome and studied in Rome and went to a bunch of Benedict's masses. And I loved him in 06, 07, 08, then got really deflated when I came back to the States in 08 at some of the things he was doing. And then when he eventually ceded power, I was like, what? I got really felt spurned, like a
Oh,
father that rejects you. But it's nice to put some things in the credit line of Benedict, not just the debit or whatever. Maybe it's the opposite. And I'm glad you reminded me of that Christmas address. That is important. But look, it's really great having you on. Really great agreeing with you. Really great disagreeing with you. I always enjoy it, and I think the audience will have as well. So, is there anything you want to say in closing, parting shot?
Oh yeah, just I enjoy doing this. I hope people understand my intentions. I hope people understand what is really motivating me to speak on this on this document, what I'm saying, what I'm not saying. If you want a more detailed explanation from my end. I did a whole 2-hour stream on it. It's on my YouTube channel. You can check that out, where I go line by line and I give a little bit more in-depth explanations there, and concessions and things like that. So thank you, Tim.
Yeah, thanks. What's your YouTube, which I do check out from time to time, is
Yeah,
what
it's
again? What?
just youtube.com/classicaltheist. I also have a I won't plug the Patreon, but
No,
I
do
guess
it.
I just did.
Do it. Plug your
Yeah,
Patreon.
I do have a Patreon as well. Just trying to, if you want to support what I do, support the content that I make, I do have a Patreon, patreon.com/classicaltheist. You get book recommendations, you get detailed notes of all the streams that I do, you get monthly articles, and also like you Q&A access, and also I do a video of on a topic of your choice per month that you're subscribed. So if you want to check that out, appreciate that.
Do you have the T in there? Isn't it classical theists, or is that just
That's
on?
only for Twitter. Yeah, for everything else, it's just classical theist.
Yeah. By the way, Ed Fazer, probably don't have to say this. He's been really great on this topic. I really like what he's. I like some of the more nuanced points he's making in favor of a strong anti-fiducius supplicans point. That I don't know why that just reminded me. Which is, dude, you got to get yourself kicked off of Patreon, bro. Like me, like I want people to support you there as long as you have it, but then the next step is you got to get kicked off. You shouldn't have a Patreon. Like I got
Well,
kicked off at the beginning January of this year.
we'll see what the future brings. We'll
It's
see.
so
I've kind of been able to stay under radar for whatever reason, but you know.
it's good. That's good. And you're noted America First as well. So good job staying under the radar. All right. God bless everyone. Happy Christmas. It's the 5th day of Christmas, and we're still celebrating in my house. We're having a giant board game tournament with my wife and all my kids, and we're keeping on a whiteboard 3 points for a gold in a game, 2 points for a silver, 1 point for bronze, no points if you come under that. There are 5 of us. We're gonna go do that again. So I hope everyone's having a great 5th day of Christmas. Christmas ain't over. It's an octave. God bless you, CT, and God bless your family. And
Yeah, you too. All
thanks, man.
right,
Good
thanks.
show. Peace out.
Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou amongst women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb, Jesus.
Holy Mary, Mother of God, pray for us sinners now and at the hour of our death.
Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou amongst women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb, Jesus.
Holy Mary, Mother of God, pray for us sinners now and at the hour of our death. Amen.
Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou amongst women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb, Jesus.
Holy Mary, Mother of God, pray for us sinners now and at the hour of our death. Amen.
Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou amongst women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb, Jesus.
Holy Mary, Mother of God, pray for us sinners now and at the hour of our death. Amen.
Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou amongst women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb, Jesus.